when disaster strikes. Will you be ready?
Good evening, and we begin tonight with the monster hurricane and its deadly impact already.
When all hope is gone, will the government be there for you? If you're looking for ways to take your prepping to the next level, then you've come to the right place. Broadcasting from a secure and well-prepared location, it's time for Prepping 2.0. And now, please welcome authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Well, hello and welcome to episode 38 of Prepping 2.0. Today, we have everything about AK-47s with Jim Fuller of Rifle Dynamics. If you've used AKs, you're going to learn some interesting stuff. And if you've never used an AK, you're going to learn more interesting stuff. But first, I'd like to say hello to my lovely co-host, my wife, Shelby Gallagher. Good morning, dear.
Good morning, Glenn. How are you? Have you had your coffee today?
I sure have. I'm a little jacked up, which means it's going to be a great show.
It's going to be spicy.
We have so many new listeners, thousands of new listeners. Could you just give folks a quick overview of what this show's about? Because we're probably getting picked up now by a bunch of people and radio listeners, too, by the way. We have a ton of radio listeners. What is this show about and what does the 2.0 mean?
So this is Prepping 2.0, and you can also, let me just throw this in here. If you want to listen to past episodes because you're just now joining us, you can go to prepping2-0.com. So many of the things we talk about, we reference at that show or at that website. But Prepping 2.0 is basically taking your preps, what you do to get ready for emergency preparedness, potential disasters, to the next level. It's like, all right, we're up in our game here. So while you may have what we joke about or kind of say lightly, you might have your beans and rice stashed away. You might have, you know, some basics. This is like taking it to the next level so that it's more dynamic, it's more layered, it's fuller, it's not just the bare minimum. It's what you need to not just survive a disaster, it is what you need to thrive in a disaster. So it's Prepping 2.0, taking it to the next level. And today's conversation is a great example of that. And but first we want to talk about what's in the merch shack, which is also at our show, or I'm sorry, I keep saying that, at our website, prepping2-0. There's a tab there that says shop. It will take you to our shopping place where you can check out what we have in our I Miss America line of t-shirts and hoodies. We also have these really cool, I love it, patiently awaiting the collapse stickers, and they have been enormously fun and popular, but you have a little contest you're running, Glenn.
Yeah, what we do with that is if you get a patiently awaiting the collapse sticker from us and you put it up on something, and now great locations for them are gun safes like coffee travel mugs. We had a water bottle. A friend of mine, 2nd Ranger Battalion, had his thing up there that said that. It was really cool. But just put them on
cars.
Something.
We've had them on the back of
cars.
Cars, yeah.
Food freeze dryers. Yeah, we've had several of those. And so if you get a sticker, and we hope you do, and you take a picture of it, email it to us, email it to me, and you can find the email address everywhere. It's glenntate123@gmail.com. Put your mailing address in there, and we're going to send you more stickers, because what we'll do is we'll put that photo up. Everyone will see it. They'll be like, oh, my goodness. And then we'll send you more stickers. And I wrote myself a note, by the way, that at the end of the show, we're going to send an I Miss America t-shirt to Jim Fuller and a patiently awaiting the collapse sticker, because I bet you $10 it's going to end up on something really, really cool, like a Soviet tank or something like that. Who knows what this guy has lying around his house?
Ooh, yeah, that's right. Tank.
You will be getting a picture of something cool.
Awesome.
There you go.
And that's the voice of Jim Fuller, everybody. Well, the other thing I wanted to talk about is we're on a bunch of radio stations, which is cool. I then also have a two-hour live show on KHNC 1360 AM in Colorado, and I wanted to give out a phone number for everybody. So if you're old like me, you might use a pen and paper, and if you're young like Shelby, you probably put it on your phone, right? But anyway, there's a voicemail number, and you can call and leave a voicemail with a question or a comment or whatever, and we'll put it on the radio show, which is fun, which that shows like we're pegging the meter on the listenership stuff, not because of me, but because of all these cool, interesting topics and people that call in. And then also, if you're a Patreon, and that's, of course, Patreon supporters, $2 a month, up to $20 a month, keeps the show going. We have a professional producer who we hire, and it actually takes money to do this. And so I'm going to give you that voicemail number to call in, 970-279-3736. That's 970-279-3736. And we'll put Patreon folks that call in and leave a voicemail. We'll put them on the show in the after show. And so that's cool. Shelby, tell everybody about the top 100 and what is item number 28 this week.
Well, real quick, going back to the leaving a message, humor is invited. If you want to leave something of great import in regards to humor, do it. We invite it. So there you go.
We're pro-humor.
Yes, we are.
Because so, we're conservatives. We actually can laugh. We don't think
we
the
can
world
laugh at ourselves pretty hard. Seeing Jim's pretty good at it, too. So speaking of not so funny things, we have on our website, again, prepping2-yo.com, lower right, top 100 things that disappear in a collapse you might think about prepping for. It is based on, I say this every week because I think it is important to recognize, it's from people's experience in Bosnia, one of the more modern day collapses that happened about 20 years ago, and it was horrifying. Number 28, gasoline containers. Plastic and metal is listed there. We've actually had this conversation, you and I, in pristine conditions now, going, God, we need this size and this size and this size. Yeah, you're going to need it because transporting fuel is going to be difficult when you cannot use vehicles to just go pump gas, and you're going to use it in a bartering situation. I think the little tiny 1 gallon ones are a good investment. You can buy them super cheap right now at places like Harbor Freight, discounty sort of places. You just need, go for it. Containers in general.
I would say Costco and Sam's Clubs, they often have probably a third of the year, they will have, 5 gallon ones with those stupid safety nozzle things that we all hate, but you just got to deal with it. By the way, if you want to get the good nozzles, you literally have to smuggle them from Canada, not from California.
I was going to say, that's where they originated from. That's where they were born.
No, so you have to get them in Canada, and you can, but we're not advocating international smuggling here. We are. But we're going to say that so that we don't get in trouble. But, you need a ton of gasoline things. I'm a lawyer. I can get this out of anything.
Exactly. You get to create deniability. Go for it. I know that big word, by the way.
I may have a Canadian law license. We're going to keep people guessing about that. Okay. It's a lie. So we have gasoline containers. So important. We have a ton of them, and we've had discussions about how it would play out and how important these things would be. But you can probably get away with the plastic ones, the 5 gallon ones. They're about $20 at Costco or Sam's. The really cool metal NATO gas cans with the long nozzle, that's good. Think about nozzles too, because you've got to actually get the fuel into, say, a vehicle. And you're going to need a good nozzle. Don't chintz out on the nozzles. And tons of people are going to be running gasoline generators. And the irony is, you can't just drive the gasoline, right? Because you don't have any gasoline. You don't have any vehicles. So plus you'll get shot driving through checkpoints and a bunch of other stuff. So you have to carry the gasoline to the generators, for example. So think of that. Yes, ma'am.
And then the secondary aspect to that, the prepping 2.0 aspect to that, and we're not going to talk about it here. Do a whole lot of Google searching and YouTubing on the preservation of gas and the preservatives that you need to preserve them for a length of time. It is not as long as you think. There you go.
Can I just say that I'm married to a woman who actually thinks about preserving gasoline? God, I'm so lucky. Thank you, Lord.
You're welcome.
So we're going to introduce Jim here in a moment, but I wanted to let everybody know something, and I alluded to it in the beginning, and that is, this is not a show just for people who have built 15 AK-47s or 74s or 105s. We'll get into all that. You can see there's a lot of technical details to AKs, and I'm like intermediate level. I'm maybe not even intermediate level. I know a little about AKs. I'm fascinated by them, but this is not going to be a geek out on technical details kind of show. Now, in the after show, because we have, by the way, Patreons have asked questions. They get to ask questions. That's one of the benefits of being a Patreon of Jim Fuller. I haven't read them yet, and neither has Jim. There may be some very technical questions, which would be cool. And I personally like the technical stuff. But my point is, if you're a basic average prepper, maybe you've never even shot an AK, you're going to learn stuff from Jim. And so I always let people know, because I hate technical geek out shows, especially about topics I don't care about, which is not the case with AKs. So anyway, with no further ado, I'd like to introduce Jim Fuller, of Rifle Dynamics, who is too modest to say it, but I will, and you can Google this. I think he's the king of AK-47s. He is largely responsible, I think, for bringing craftsmanship back to the AK world instead of, you know, terrible Chinese imports. He machines things that are absolutely amazing. I have a Rifle Dynamics AK-74 that I got several years ago, and my goal with that was the books were doing very well, and it was a very good time for me, and I wanted to get one thing in the world that was undeniably the best of whatever it was. Some people get really expensive fountain pens or Rolex watches or whatever, just that one thing. And my one thing was an RD-501 in gray when they first came out, and it is an amazing piece of engineering, and I love it. So with no further ado, Jim Fuller, say hello to the folks.
Hi, folks. Glenn, thank you for that, man. Those are very kind words, and I'm glad that 501 is taking care of you. That was kind of the flagship gun for us. It was the one that kind of launched the whole thing, you know?
Absolutely. No, it's a phenomenal gun. And so, as you can tell from what I'm saying, Jim makes, and his company makes, he's since sold his company, but it's being run by good people that he put in place. He makes the best AKs in the world. And I'm not trying to name drop here, and I'm not going to drop names, but I was talking to you one time, and you said that the a head of state was out that day, like, shooting and looking at guns, and I think bought a bunch of them. And but you don't have to be the king of a country to get an RD, and we can talk about that more. So I think Shelby has a question.
Sure. Hello, Shelby.
Hello, Jim. How are you?
I'm well this morning. It's a wonderful Saturday morning.
It is. So I come at this, just so you know, I am, when you hear Glenn say he's like medium knowledge of AKs, I'm less than that. Mine is, I've shot them. I've shot ARs, and there's always that comparison between ARs and AKs, and we'll get into that and all of that. But just as an introductory, what would you, in answering this question, what should people who are prepping 2.0ers, why should they have an AK?
Best thing I can say is mainly because it's very maintenance free. And you know, depending on the caliber you get, it should be a 7.62. I mean, I know Glenn's a fan of the 5.45. I am as well. I firm believer in the 5.45, but the ammo is just not as available as 7.62 ammo is. So I want to qualify that. So it should be a 7.62. The best gun that you can afford. The best gun that you can afford. They're, you know, the cheaper guns will do the job, but they won't do the job in a hardcore manner. You know, they do have a life, and they're built to a price point. But the AK in general was just designed to be able to work for, you know, it was designed to be handed to a conscript that had very little to no training and be able to operate simply and effectively. And it does. It does that probably better than anything. You know, I mean, I'm an M4 fan, and I have some pretty nice ones myself, and I do keep those around. I do have a couple of those that I keep around because, hey, maybe there might only be 5.56 ammo and I have to deal with that. Of course, I have 5.56 AKs too for that reason.
Wow. Okay. So again, and I know what I know about AKs, and I think it's also worth it. This is just my opinion. Go out there and look on YouTube and watch someone handling an AK, because they're different. They're very different. But you tell us, what are some general facts about AKs? Again, speaking kind of to the newbie or to the middle line person that's out there, general facts about AKs. And you've given us a little bit on ammo, but what are other things that you think that we should know?
Well, one thing is most people, particularly people in America, I see it with a lot of veterans and law enforcement who have had, you know, training of that nature, but it's been based on the M4. And they'll take a lot of that training and try to apply it to the AK. Now, a lot of that stuff is legitimate, you know, ballistics, aiming the guns, things of that nature. But the way you handle and operate the gun is very different. It has its own manual of arms, and it should be learned. It's not difficult to do. It's actually quite simple. It's very left-handed friendly, which a lot of people don't think it is. And if you look around, you know, YouTube is a great source for stuff. I mean, there's good and bad stuff out there, but if you look around and you look to the quality people, you'll find I've actually done quite a few videos on weapons handlings with the AK and how they should be treated and cared for. I mean, or, you know, lack thereof care. They don't really require a whole lot. I mean, my AKs, I'll change a couple of springs in them every 4,000 or 5,000 rounds, and that's about the most maintenance I do to them, other than cleaning and lubrication. You know, it's just, it is, it's a good, you know, it's the kind of gun that was designed to outlive the cockroach.
And we want to be the cockroaches. We want to be the cockroaches.
That's awesome. Yeah. Well, very cool. And I think that, I will absolutely agree with you. I remember the first time I shot one, I'm like, this is not intuitive. I think you're right on with that. It's a different beast, but once I figured it out, you know, got my muscle memory going like this, now it's fun. And mm-hmm. Glenn even said that to me, goes, these make you feel kind of cool. And Glenn and I have talked about that. That first time someone shoots an AR, we've both been with people who have, and they just look up and you're like, they're addicted, they're hooked. It's like, that was so awesome. Same thing with an AK. I just think there's a little bit more zing to them. They just feel good to shoot. But yeah, they're not intuitive. Everything, there is kind of this kind of different way that they're made up. So tell us some general facts though about AKs. And what I think is interesting, and Glenn brings it out in their books, and I'm going to kind of, there's AK-47s, then there's AK-74s. AK-74s are no longer with us, but what's... facts about them, yeah.
Yeah, well, AK-47 really actually pertains to the first three models of the AK, which after 1959 were not produced anymore by the Russians. So AK-47, the very first one, the Type 1, was a combination of stamped. It was a stamped receiver gun, not like what we have today. And it actually wasn't really that good of a design. It didn't work well. But at the same time they were developing it, they developed a milled receiver version too, which they ended up switching to after 2 years in 1949. They went to the Type 2 AK, which was a milled receiver gun. And it was a really nice gun. I actually have one of those. It was a PLO bring back that we rewelded, and it's a beautiful gun. They're just kind of like a really nice old workhorse type of thing. But then after that was the Type 3 AK-47, which was a simplified version. It was easier to produce of the milled version. And then in 1959, they did the AKM, which is basically what you see today. It's the stamped 1 millimeter stamped sheet metal receiver, lighter specs on the barrel and the blocks. Everything was lightened up. The gun just became much more user-friendly that way. It wasn't heavy. You could carry it all day and not break your back. And then the next big evolution after that was the AK-74 in 1974, when they basically took the AKM and chambered it in 5.45, and then made a few other changes that were updated it, you know, the 90-degree gas block, different type of front sight, different type of a muzzle where they could use different devices and stuff. So that's kind of like how the evolution of that went. And then you talked about the 74 not being so available. It still really is in this country, but the problem is parts. All the quality AKs in this country are built on foreign parts. There are surplus parts kits that were once machine guns. Some parts are better than others. There's still a lot of good parts out there. But the problem with AK-74s is a lot of the 5.45 parts are really – we used to get most of them from Bulgaria. And the Bulgarians never went to war. So when they demil guns, they're basically brand new parts. And we built some really nice guns out of that stuff. You know, Glenn, your 501 was built on those kind of parts. So that's one reason why that gun works so well. But the Bulgarians are supplying military contracts now, and they're not cutting up guns anymore. So we don't see those parts kits coming in large amounts anymore, which has really kind of hurt the production availability of 545s. We had to raise the price on 545s just because what kits are out there are more expensive now than what we were paying before. So it's just kind of like a supply and demand thing right now. Somebody might find a cache of 100,000 kits somewhere that they can buy from some country and get into the country, and that may change things for a little while. But it's something that I've always said all along, for this gun to be a viable gun in this country, we're going to have to start making the parts here and making them properly. You know, we can get into that. That's kind of a different conversation altogether.
Yep.
But we need to start making the parts here, because these foreign parts are not always going to be available. You know, and we do make a lot of good parts. We make good receivers. We make some decent barrels here, a lot of other accessories and stuff, but we don't make the three main parts here that the AK needs to be an AK. And that's where we need to go next.
Exactly. Well, now tell us about the cartridge that the 47 fires, the 7.62x39, and the inevitable comparison to 5.56x45.
Well, and that's why it came about. You know, the Russians wanted to compete with our 5.56. They seen the benefits that we were having of it, being able to carry more ammo. You know, I mean, all the stuff that you hear about. You know, I don't want to go down all that. We've heard all that before. The 5.56, a lot of people say it's a much better ammo than the 5.45, but that's basically because we have so much good 5.56 to choose from here and very little 5.45 to choose from. Believe me, they got some 5.45 ammo over there that is absolutely devastating for shooting bad people with. The stuff we get here from Russia is the 7N6, which is an old mothball caliber they don't use anymore. That's why they sold it all over here. And it's pretty nasty itself. That bullet, when it tends to hit things, when it hits fleshy targets, it immediately starts spinning and ripping up stuff horribly. And it's such a long, skinny bullet, it does a lot of damage. And it's really good for that regard. But the stuff they have now is even far better than that. The 7N6 does not penetrate well. And that's one of the downsides to it. Just like, you know, everybody complained about the 5.56. Well, it can be deflected by a tree branch. Well, yeah, it can. That's the problem you have with smaller bullets. But through technology, different bullet designs, different powders, different loads, some of that can be overran. But that is where the 7.62 really shines. A 7.62 cartridge is not really good for long distance. It maxes out. It starts going transonic at 550 yards. And generally, it's considered a, you know, 0 to 300 yard round. And it's very effective in that range. And the nice thing about 7.62, that 30 caliber bullet, you know, generally 124 grain, whatever you're running, is going to shoot right through stuff. It's not going to be deflected. It shoots through walls. It shoots through cars. It's a very effective round for shooting through things that people hide behind. And in a survival situation, I kind of like to tend to lean that way. The 5.45 might be better for you for long range targets, like if you're trying to hunt small game, things of that nature. But the 7.62, if you need to shoot through stuff, that's what that gun was meant to do, and it does it really well.
Yeah, it's an intermediate cartridge in between a full rifle cartridge like NATO 7.62 by 51 and say 9mm. I mean, it's that perfect middle ground, especially for 0 to 100 yards. And one thing preppers need to think about when it comes to ammo, and Jim touched on it, availability. I think there are so many AKs out there. And when I say AKs, I'll mean AKMs, AK-47s, AKs in 7.62. We'll talk a little bit more about the 74 later, I think. But so when I say AKs, that's what I mean. There's so many AKs and SKSs, which are like the rifle, the old timey, they run on 7.62 by 39.2. My point is there's so much ammunition out there, and it's the classic gas station test. Like if you're going to pull into a gas station out in the country and they got bait and they got beer and they got ammo, what kind of ammo are they going to have? And you're going to find 5.56. And nowadays, I think you're going to find 7.62 by 39 because a lot of folks got cheaper AKs back when they were cheaper. And they got SKSs, and it's a popular cartridge now. And there's a lot of really, I think, well-made American, you know, manufactured 7.62 by 39. It's not all surplus stuff.
No, it's not. Yeah, there is some good stuff out there.
Yeah, I know Hornady makes some, for example. Mm-hmm. That's pretty mind-blowing. And so that's the gas station test for ammunition. Of course, that's not true for 5.45. And I think you make a really good point about penetrating vehicles and things like that, because in Shelby and Mai's vision of what we're all going to be facing, hopefully there'll be no gunfighting because nobody wants to do that. I've never been in the military. I've never gone to war. I am not one of these. So I don't know how awful war is, but I do listen to a lot of my friends who have, and when they say it's horrible and you don't want it, I listen. Well, we're going to have to come back to the second part of this after the break. Jim Fuller's with us, Rifle Dynamics. You got to stick around. The learning and fun has only started.
We'll be right back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate right after this.
PrepperNet, where preppers unite. Looking to meet other like-minded people in your area? Looking to start your own prepper group? Already have a group? Join PrepperNet.com. PrepperNet has gathered the biggest names in the industry to help unite preppers everywhere. Join John Jacob Schmidt, Scott Hunt, Dr. Bones and Nurse Amy, Glenn Tate, Shelby Gallagher, Charlie Hogwood, Samuel Culper, Survivor Jane, Rick Austin, Franklin Horton, Ryan Mitchell, and Brian Duff. Our team is united. Check us out at PrepperNet. PrepperNet, where preppers unite. PrepperNet.com.
Hi, this is Glenn Tate. I wanted to let you know about the ammo supply place that I go to. There's no endorsements. Nobody's paying me anything. They're just good guys. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Ammo Supply Warehouse. Butch out there will take care of you. You know, prepping 1.0 is getting ammunition by the box. Prepping 2.0 is getting a case. You need to have at least a case of ammo for every gun.
Shelby Gallagher here. For all the ladies out there, you can never have enough ammo.
The Operator G1 is a full-featured, rugged comm solution designed for the Midland MXT 100 and 105. Designed and manufactured in the USA, the Operator is an all-in-one support platform for two-way wireless communication for civilians. Using the GMRS bands, there is no ham license required, and no test is needed for operation. Ideal for preppers, hunters, homesteaders, ranchers, and people just like you. Waterproof when closed, this rugged system houses the Midland radio, microphone, and antenna, providing an always ready, always charged, grab-and-go solution for emergencies or events, as well as an ideal solution for a base station or vehicle use. Powered by a 60-amp-hour internal battery, the Operator recharges quickly and easily using the supplied AC charger, the internal solar controller, or directly from a vehicle. If you recognize the value of wireless communication with or without grid power, the Operator G1 is an award-winning solution that allows simple, one-button communication when it counts. Our 2-year warranty, quality materials, and first-class assembly technicians deliver a high-value solution when you need to be sure you can get your comms up.
And we're back with more of Prepping 2.0 with authors Glenn Tate and Shelby Gallagher.
Welcome back, everyone. This is Shelby Gallagher with Prepping 2.0, and we have with us today Jim Fuller of Rifle Dynamics. He is the guy, the expert, we believe, and I think we have proven it very well, about AKs. So, Jim, wanting to just ask you, and I'm sure you hear a lot of them, and I know you're ready for an answer on this one. Myths about AKs. There are a lot of them out there. Tell us what your thoughts are on that.
Well, you know, we always hear the comment about the AK versus the AR. You know, and it's like the same thing. A good AR is not as undependable as people say it is, and a good AK is not as inaccurate as people say it is.
Oh, very good.
It's all based on how the gun's put together, what you're using it for, the ammo you're using. There's a lot of things like that, you know. But myths about AKs, the biggest one is accuracy. And the first thing you got to think about is one thing. There's two different things that we look at with accuracy when we're dealing with firearms. And one in the Western world is considered precision accuracy, where, you know, you're trying to shoot as accurate as you can. You're trying to shoot every bullet through the same hole. And that's very impressive. It takes very high-end equipment to do that. It takes a lot of skill to do that. And it's impressive. I used to do it a lot when my eyes were better, and I was actually pretty good at it. I'm still not bad at it, but it's just I don't do it as much just because I don't see as well and time and, you know, everything else. But the thing is with the AK, it was never meant to be a precision weapon. It was meant to be combat effective accuracy. Now, some people may not be familiar with that term, but basically combat effective accuracy means this. This is your target, you know, basically.
He's pointing in his torso, everyone. You can't see that on the radio.
Oh, okay. I forgot. This is,
that's okay.
Yeah. But it's basically, you know, the center of mass, your chest area. You know, there's a, you know, most people's chests are roughly 18 to 20 inches wide. And an AK is more than capable of hitting a target that big at 300 yards. More than capable of that. Most AKs, even some of the lesser quality ones, will shoot a 3-inch group at 100 yards. So a 3-inch group at 100 yards, look at your chest and put a 3-inch ring on it. Is that a good hit? I think so. Now, if you go out to 200 yards and that 3-inch group now becomes 6 inches, is that still a good hit? I think so. If you go out to 300 yards and that's now a 9-inch circle, is that still a devastating hit? You bet it is. Now, we can extrapolate that out and go on to 400 yards. I've actually watched Travis Haley take an AK at 1,000 yards, and his holdover was 64 feet, but he took 20 rounds and hit a target, a 200-yard bullseye target, 8 times out of 20 rounds from 1,000 yards with an AK. Now, of course, it was like mortar rounds. So the holes on the target were oval-shaped because they were coming in, you know, down at an angle being mortared in. But the thing is if you know what your rifle is capable of, you can do stuff like that.
Yeah, very good. So if you had a recommendation to just, you know, the average prepper 2.0er out there, what is a good AK in general for your, if you were to just recommend a good AK to someone, what would you, and I realize there's all kinds of factors with that. What are they using it for and all of that? So I know that's a loaded question for you. Haha.
Let me try to qualify that because I sometimes can get in trouble doing this stuff because I don't want to disparage anybody's business. And there are people out there that, you know, there's a term that I actually heard a guy in the industry quote. It's like, well, we build guns to a price point. And that's kind of a nice way of saying that we build guns as cheaply as possible because there are people out there that need that. There's not everybody out there can afford to spend north of $1,000 or $2,000 for a gun. So the inexpensive $600-$700 guns, they need to be out there. Understand what they are. Do your research. But if that's all you can afford, buy it because they still work. They just don't, you just can't put as much heavy use on them as you can on a better gun. Moving up from that range there, an Arsenal, in the, even a Wasser, the Wassers these days, you know, the Romanian Wasser that's been imported for years. I think you can still get those for around $800 or $900. That's a really decent gun. It's a Comblock Arsenal made gun. It'll run, it'll outlive the cockroach just like anything else. It may not be pretty. It may be a little rough. You may have some cannon parts on it, but it's an AK and it works. You know, you can move up from there. You can go to an Arsenal, which is going to be maybe in the $1,000 range or more, depending on the model you get. And then, you know, you can go into customs after that, which can go anywhere from $1,500 to $3,000, $4,000, depending on what you're trying to buy or what your purpose for the gun is.
Yeah, and I think, and I'm not asking you to talk about brands or anything like that, and I appreciate that. I think that there are some pretty decent AKs out there for what I think folks listening to this are going to need them for. And so before I start naming brands, I want to say you're absolutely right. If you're going to shoot this thousands and thousands of rounds, stuff will start breaking in most of these, you know, regular kind of AKs. But I think that a lot of preppers don't need guns that are going to go thousands and thousands of rounds for a couple reasons.
That's
first of all,
very good point. That's
yeah,
a very good point.
Exactly. Because that's one of the things. Jim Yeager has a phrase or a story or a principle or something, and it's about basically, should I get this oddball pistol caliber? Usually it's like, you know, 357 SIG or something like that that costs a lot of money. And he says, well, given that you're only going to shoot it 200 rounds a year, if you're like most people, then get whatever caliber you want because you're not going to be shooting thousands of rounds, so it doesn't matter. And it's sort of the same principle. With AKs, I mean, if you're a prepper and you should spend at least 1,000 rounds familiarizing yourself and smoothing the thing out, absolute minimum. We always talk about every gun you have, you should have 1,000 rounds at a bare minimum. And so, yeah, there's 1,000 rounds. And then, like with most AKs, you're going to fall in love with it. And like Shelby was saying, it's going to be fun. And there's another couple thousand rounds over a couple year period. You're going to be, you know, shooting pop cans and doing all kinds of fun stuff and testing out the accuracy and doing that. And so let's say maybe 5,000 rounds is probably the most that most normal people are going to shoot their AK. And
that's
so
pretty realistic.
Yeah. And so I think a lot of the AKs out there that I think are really well built in the 5,000 round range, and I'm going to say Century. I have a bunch of Centuries, C39, V2s, the V1s, were the sights were, I don't know why you would put a set screw in a rear sight on an AK, but apparently it was done. But the V2s, he's laughing. But V2s, no, if you're a normal prepper and they're probably, I don't know what they are now, probably $800, $900, something like that. Perfectly good AKs. I've never had a problem with them. They've run really, really well. And so there's that. So I want to, yeah, introduce the idea of the realistic thing. I will say this, though. Over 5,000 rounds, I would think Arsenal, Rifle Dynamics, all those sorts of things at a minimum. There's a great website, and I'm surprising you with this here, Jim, so you don't know what I'm going to say. AK-4774 Operators Union, right? And they do stuff. Yeah. My point with that is, and it's fun to watch, but they will do torture tests.
Yeah, I gave that guy a start.
Exactly. And they will do torture tests on various AKs that are, it's interesting, it's fun to see that if you freeze it and thaw it 10 times and you drag it behind a truck for 75 miles and you throw it out of the space shuttle and it re-enters the atmosphere and see how burned up the furniture is. I mean, they really torture these guns. And my point with that, by obvious exaggeration, is you're not going to be doing any of that stuff. And so if they can get a gun to break at 10,000 rounds after doing all this crazy stuff to it, interesting, but not terribly relevant to your life. So anyway, that's my thing. And I'm a big fan, and so Shelby, we talk about this all the time, whether it's radios or water treatment or anything else. It's better to have stuff and use it and train with it and practice with it instead of waiting to get the ultimate Uber whatever, because there's a tendency in the prepping community, I'm probably going to offend some people, which I try not to do, but it's about to happen, and that is some people in the prepping community go online and it's their hobby to research things and get really into the details, watch 50 videos of throwing AKs out of space shuttles and seeing what happens, and never actually getting a $700 AK and 5,000 rounds of ammunition and actually shooting it. So folks out there, you gotta start somewhere and start with one of these things. And then seriously, work your way up and get a rifle dynamics. By the way, the difference in every single aspect of that gun is amazing. You mentioned your eyes. You make your own rear sights for AKs that have a wider notch. And by the way, it's kind of hard not to have a wider notch than a standard AK rear sight. It's about the width of a frog hair. And so, in fact, in where we're recording right now, I have an RPK with Jim Fuller.
Worse.
Yeah, exactly. With Jim Fuller rear sights on the back of it. But anyway, so that's the point. Get an AK. I think Century Arms C39 V2s are fine. I know they have another one that's cheaper. I don't know anything about those, but they're out there. And one of the things I want to talk about with the price of AKs is in the day, and we always talk about 2009 is a time when a lot of us started prepping because, you know, Obama got elected and the economy was tanking. And a lot of us, like you talk to preppers, it's pretty much, I'm going to say virtually uniform. It was about 2008 or 9 people started prepping. Back then, AKs, Wassers or Bulgarian stuff or Polish Tantals or all kinds of AKs were, I don't know, $400 or $500 maybe. And ARs were like $1,500. And the same was roughly true with ammunition. You could get a lot of really cheap, good guns. And now, Jim Fuller, correct me if I'm wrong, I think that ARs and AKs are kind of rough. The guns are kind of roughly the same price. And the ammo is kind of roughly the same price. So now, present day, 2019, you're taking cost out as a factor. And it comes down to what gun you run well and what gun you like. Is that pretty accurate? I've talked for too long, Jim.
No, that's a good point. It is. It really comes down to what you, and I'm a firm believer in that too. I prefer the AK because I've been running it mostly for over 30 years. That's just the gun that works for me, and it's the way I'll go out of this world. But what works for you is the best thing. If an AR is the best thing for you, then that's what you should have. The one thing I would say on some of the lesser guns, that if you're not going to use it, that's certainly a very valid point that you don't need to worry about it so much. But if you are a person that trains, the worst damage that you can do on those guns is high round counts in a short amount of time. Now I know that there's guys doing their 5,000 round counts, but those are done over a period of time. Whereas if you put 1,000 rounds through a gun in one day, it's way worse wear on that gun than it is 1,000 rounds over 2 or 3 range visits. So understand the difference of that. So the point I'm trying to make here is that if you're a person who does a lot of training, if you go to a lot of training classes, you're going to spend, 800 to 1,000 rounds in a weekend, and you're going to put that much to that gun in a short amount of time. And it's just the kind of thing, if you're buying the lesser expensive guns, you might want to buy two, because having a backup like that, you have one that you can abuse, one that you can count on. I don't know. I'm just trying to say this because a lot of the stuff you see people test these guns with, again, like you said, are not realistic. The most realistic test you can put on a gun is a very high round count in a short amount of time. And some of those guns don't do well under those conditions is the point I want to make. The point that they make a good thing if you're not going to use them a lot, I 100% agree. But if you're going to abuse that gun, you better have a backup plan, at least for a survival situation.
Exactly. Yeah. One is none, two is one. And that's a great idea to have that second pristine gun. Yeah. I have, for example, I have a bunch of AK-74s and they're Century Arms ones and they're not fancy. I picked those things up for $400 a piece in the day, when a case of 1,080 5.45 rounds from Russia was like $79 or something. Funny story. We're drifting in the 5.45 topic, but it's a good time, I guess. Yeah. Great story. In my books, there's a real live guy, Special Forces Ted, who's a Green Beret and befriended my team of guys. And we were talking one time and he says, Glenn, you're so into the AK-74. Obviously, he's familiar with him. He's a Green Beret. He's probably had him shot at him, right? So he's pretty familiar. And he goes, so Glenn, what are the ballistics of the 5.45? And I said 11. And he's thinking ballistic coefficients. He's got equations going in his head. He goes, 11. And I said, yeah, 11 cents a round, man. That's what it is. That's what's so intriguing about it. So anyway, there's that. Well, another thing, a big difference I see in ARs and AKs, and something that matters to a lot of people, not as much to me, accessorizing. You know, everyone talks about ARs are the Legos and rails. You can put everything on it. What's the deal, both in the past and the present, with accessorizing AKs? This is a fascinating story.
Well, you can look at really what that comes down to is the difference of when the guns were created. You know, the AK is 40s technology. The M4 is really 50s, 60s technology when things started becoming more modular. Whereas, you know, prior to that, it wasn't the case, you know. So the AK was never really designed to have a bunch of add-ons. But over the years, we've actually come up with some pretty good means and methods for doing that. I mean, the Ultimac was probably one of the first things that came out here in the country that gave us a good solid scout mount option for running a red dot, flashlight, whatever, which is my particular preferred configuration. Also, too, you know, the side rail has always been a good option for scopes. But the older Comblock side rail attachments are big, bulky, not always the best, not always the most reliable. But again, we have some American-made stuff, RS Regulate. That stuff is just amazing. It's lightweight. It's bomb-proof. I run it on any of, like, my DMR. I run an ACOG on one of those things, and I can take it on and off that gun and hold zero, putting it back on every time. So, and then nowadays, you're getting more and more rail systems coming out now that work for the AK. The AK is a little bit different because of the way it's designed and the way it works in the AR. So it was a lot harder to come up with something that works, but there's stuff out there now. The SLR rails are pretty decent. We use a lot of those now, and they give you a lot more options now. Now, myself, like I said, I like a white light and a red dot. That's all I ever put on my guns. You know, I mean, I'm a simple guy living in a residential neighborhood. I don't need a laser aimer. I'm not running night vision. You know, I mean, I'm just kind of practical like that. But if you wanted to hang all that stuff on your AK, you can now. There are options for that that work really well. There's an Echo stuff from Russia. If you want to add 13 pounds to your gun, you'll have more real estate for rail space than you can imagine. And it looks badass as hell.
But typical Russian approach, like heavy and overdone, right? I mean, they love that stuff.
Well, you know, they do, but... You know, some of the guys like the DEMA guys that come over here and train quite a bit, they're actually going to be doing a class with them here this month. We're hosting them here. And those guys love the stuff we do because we make such lightweight stuff and that they're not used to. You know, DEMA tells me, he goes, man, you guys put all this stuff on here and it's like half the weight of my gun. This is awesome. what can I tell you?
and so folks know, what is DEMA?
Oh, that's just short for Dmitry Yermak from Center T. It's a training company in Russia, and Dmitry Grizdak are both former Spetsnaz guys, and they come over here every year or two, a couple of years, and they're currently on a tour right now doing some classes here in the country. We're doing one here in Las Vegas, the 23rd, 24th, I believe it is, and then they're actually doing others all around the country. I think they've got like 10 different classes going on right now, but you can look up SaberWorks 13 is kind of running their tour. And they've got a site set up to wherever those guys are training at. And if you're interested in really getting good solid AK training, do it. These guys are awesome. You know, you'll love Dima. He doesn't speak English very well, but it doesn't matter. He knows how to teach, And you will learn stuff from this guy, and it'll be a great adventure for you. I guarantee it.
And this is why Jim is not a member of the Rotary Club. Jeez.
Hanging out with Spetsnaz, which for folks, that's Soviet, I'm so dated, Russian Special Forces.
They're real deal guys. They're real deal guys, and they're really nice dudes. They know their stuff. And I've actually had some great experiences where I put these guys on the same range with a guy like Travis Haley and a couple other Special Forces guys that were friends with us. And, you know, these guys were all enemies at one time.
Yeah.
You know? And it was kind of a tense moment there for a while. And then we all kind of started shooting, and that all went away. And everybody had a good day. It was pretty fun.
Good. Mm-hmm.
Exactly. Another difference as far as accessories go, well, it's not accessory, but anyway, another difference between ARs and AKs is the AK's short sight radius and often use of iron sights, because, you know, accessories are available for AKs, but they're not nearly as common. Talk about where the sights are, the short radius, and is that a big deal? I have a theory that it is not, but I want to hear what Jim Fuller has to say about AKs. Might be more relevant than my theory.
It's more about the shooter than it is. I mean, you can do things to make the sights better. I mean, that's one of the first modifications we started doing, was opening up the rear notch on the back and radius in it, you know, the kind of stuff that we've been doing for years. That helps a lot. But at the same time, too, if you open that notch too wide, you kind of lose a little bit of precision on that. You know, it all depends on if you're using the gun for close range work, open it up big, you can aim big, hit big, you know, aim small, hit small at long distance. But the sight radius, really, there's people that will say that's a problem, and it is. But what it means is you just have to be a little bit more precise about your secrets of shooting, your three secrets: sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger control. Short sight radius, you see people shoot pistols at 100 yards, right? How short is that sight radius compared to an AK?
Yeah, half, a third.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, yeah, the AK does have a short sight radius, there's no doubt. But it really shouldn't be a hindrance if you know the proper way to do it. Sight alignment, sight picture, and trigger control. You're going to hit. You know, mm-hmm. it's just science. It works, you know.
And it's worked well for a long time for the Comblock countries. One of the things about iron sights and the short sight radius of the AK is that it comes back to the philosophy of use, to borrow a phrase from Nut and Fancy. Philosophy of use, the AK is for preppers, I think, a magnificent, what I would call truck gun, first of all, mm-hmm. And basic firearm. Let's say you've got a team and you're blessed to have a team of really well-trained dudes, and they can run, you know, M4s with laser, all kinds of cool stuff, and that's great. But you're going to have secondary folks who need a really good solid rifle that's always going to work, and they can make hits, especially 100-yard hits. And that's why I think, and I talk about in my books, there were the gate guards, and they had AK-74s, and it worked magnificently well. So think about the philosophy of use out there, listeners, when you're thinking, oh, these AKs, everyone talks about 100 to 300 yards and their iron sights and everything. Philosophy of use, they're really, really good for about 90% of what you guys are going to need, because unless you guys are hitting targets at 600 yards and, I don't know, you know, shooting down drones or something, I mean, you're not going to need this stuff. You know, mm-hmm. keep it real, right? And AKs are very real.
Well, one thing. Let me just go into this about the sights on the AKs. It's kind of important, I think. One thing that we've focused on. We don't really. There's a lot of different ways to zero an AK, but what we found is that if you set it on 100 yards and you zero it at 25 yards for a dead-on hit in the center of chest at 25 yards, from 25 yards out to 300 yards, if you hold that same point of aim, you're going to get a combat effective hit without having to think about anything else. You don't have to figure, well, do I need to hold over? Do I need to hold low? Do I need to hold high? If there's windage, that's different. But as far as elevation, if you zero your gun if you zero a 7.62 at 25 yards, you're going to be able, out to 300 yards, you're going to be able to get in this kind of, in the zone from probably just below the rib cage to up into your throat. And any one of those runs are combat effective hits for stopping somebody that's trying to hurt you.
Exactly. And there's another prepper factor, I think, when it comes to AKs. And I don't know if anyone's ever thought of this, because as you can tell, when you have a Green Beret ask you about ballistics and you answer with cost, right? I'm not like, I don't think like normal people. I'm very practical, right? And I think that there's a terrorizing image with the AK. The AK is a scary looking gun to a lot of people.
It is.
And it's known, you know, throughout the world. First of all, it's the Soviet bloc. Terrorists use them and all of that. Even the flag of whatever it is, Mozambique or something like that, has an AK silhouette on the flag, right? It's the only gun that's on a nation's flag. And so there's a bit of a terrorizing effect, which I think is cool. And here's why. Do I want to terrorize people? No. Do I want to deter people from messing with me and the people I care about? Absolutely. So consider that. And I'll tell you this, and I should have put this in a book. By the way, Jim, I'm thinking about doing a second edition of the 10-book series, and I might put this in here because the more I think about it, the more cool it is. And that is, if I roll up or somebody rolls up on me and I see really well-trained guys, you can tell that they know their stuff. First of all, they're not a bunch of like hopped up hillbillies, you know, the kind of YouTube guys you see that say, hold my beer, and then all of a sudden there's like blood everywhere. I mean, they're not those kind of guys because they shoot themselves in the foot. When you see squared away, calm, professional dudes, and they have AKs, that tells me, oh my goodness, these guys can shoot with iron sights, and these guys know what they're doing. So there's that. And if you see, you know, a bunch of gangbangers with AKs, well, then you can tell they don't handle them well. And then to me, I don't know, take things lightly, but I'm less and less concerned if they don't know how they're operating it. So consider that. And AKs, guys, I say guys, men and women, great guns. We have just a few seconds to wrap up the regular show, about 30 seconds, Jim. Do you have any parting thoughts for folks who are listening on the radio and the regular podcast? We'll keep talking in the after show that Patreons get to listen to.
Sure. Well, the only thing is, whatever weapon you choose to use, just practice with it. Make sure you know how to use it. You understand the sights on it. You understand its abilities and its disabilities. And don't try to make it be what it isn't. And it's going to work for you. It's just that simple. You want something that's going to be dependable, reliable. The AK fits that bill. The AR can do it as well. You just have to be a little bit more maintenance on it. So that's really a personal choice at that point.
Thank you, Jim. Shelby, take us out.
Thank you so much for joining us this week, everyone. Failing to prepare is preparing to fail. Have a good week.
You've been listening to Prepping 2.0 with authors Shelby Gallagher and Glenn Tate. All of the fun and easy prepping information heard on this podcast can be found online at prepping2-0.com. You can also find out more about Glenn's books online at 299days.com and about Shelby's books online at agreatstate.com. Until next time, be smart, be safe, and be prepared.